This is the Mark Cox Morning Show.
Let's redraw every single state we can as Democrats to create more Democratic seats. That's the only thing we can do right now, because if we don't, this country's representative in Washington will not reflect the country.
Yeah, Claire Bear, I'm telling you what, man. The Claire McCaskill earning her money the hard way these days at MSNBC. And talking out of both sides of her mouth. First of all, she's talking about how bad this whole redistricting and gerrymandering is. It's awful. It's ruined the country. And then saying, well, but the only answer is for us to do more of it. I mean, it's unbelievable what's coming out of her mouth. That was this morning from MSDNC or whatever they're calling it now, Miss Now. They haven't officially changed the name yet, have they?
I don't think so.
But anyway, Claire is still on there drawing a salary for some reason as a commentator for Joe Scarborough on Morning Joe. Yeah, I'll play you more of what she said, because I want you have to listen to the hypocrisy live from Claire's mouth. We'll get to that for you coming up in just a few minutes. We've got Shannon Bream from Fox News Sunday this hour, our friend Griff Jenkins. I got to be honest with you. I mean, I try to keep up on most things that are going on. What I didn't realize is that tensions have apparently spiked between the United States and Venezuela. I'm not 100% sure why that is this morning, but I do know that the U.S. Navy is involved in this whole thing, and Griff happens to be covering that story this morning, so we'll get a full explanation from Griff coming up here around 8:35. Just a quick reminder here, you know that each month we like to feed our first responders. We are low on nominations right now, so I need you to nominate your favorite first responder by name, the individual firefighter, police officer, EMS worker, whoever it happens to be that has done a great job for you, or you know who works hard every day to protect their community. We will select a winner based on those recommendations. And then, of course, Grillmaster Tony cooks up a delicious feast, and I deliver it in person. Sometimes Tony goes with me to that first responder's office or district or wherever they happen to be. And then they get to enjoy some free food from Grillmaster Tony. So get those in, please. Just go to 971talk.com/contests to feed our first responders, and we will read your nominations, and we will pick a winner. How about that? All right, Ethan Bright in studio with me right now. And Ethan, if you don't mind, let's get to our top stories, please.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
Let's redraw every single state we can as Democrats to create more Democratic seats. That's the only thing we can do right now, because if we don't, this country's representative in Washington will not reflect the country.
The only way Democrats can be reflected in D.C. is if they cheat. Am I hearing you correctly, Claire McCaskill?
I hope to God it doesn't come south to Atlanta or to Texas or to Dallas or some of our NFL teams, because you'll lose it. I mean, people will actually quit buying tickets.
Yeah, well, that is what that's Tommy Tuberville. He is a congressman, and Tommy says, hey, listen, I don't know what the hell they're doing in Minnesota with these male cheerleaders, but that better not come down south.
City Hall has officially fired the city's emergency management commissioner, Sarah Russell. They were in charge of sounding tornado sirens. We know that alarm never went off, the protocol failing during the May 16th tornado.
What in the hell took so long? That's the question we're asking around here this morning. Why did it take so long to get somebody fired who clearly was incompetent on the day of a major emergency, at the same time they were in charge of working that major emergency?
He was arrested for the murders that Brian Koberger was painfully awkward around women, but these documents that police shared with the public.
Yeah, that's just a quick idea there on what's going on in that Koberger case out there. And they were commenting on that along with Jonathan Turley on Fox News yesterday. Let me get back to this Claire Bite. I need you to hear this. She's on with Joe Scarborough this morning, who, you know, Joe, at some point in his life, apparently identified as a Republican. I don't know when he was confused about that. None of the rest of us were ever confused of Joe Scarborough being anything other than a leftist. He is now on MSNBC, and he's lamenting the fact that, why can't we all just get along? How did it devolve into this where it has to be a red district or a blue district? Claire McCaskill, help me understand this. You've been in the Senate. Why can't we do this? Well, you know, Claire was in the Senate where whoever wins a Senate seat is a reflection of having to run a statewide race, very different than individual congressional seats, which are much more reflective of their communities in which they live. And Claire's like, well, this is just awful. The whole idea of gerrymandering is just awful. Listen to her.
Safe seats in the House create gridlock because the only thing a congressman or congresswoman worries about is a primary. It is a disincentive to compromise. It is disincentive to long-term legislation that actually businesses and citizens can rely on because it swings back and forth based on who has the majority. So this is bad for government.
So let me get this straight. Safe districts, which is what she's talking about here. So gerrymandering means you draw a district so you increase your candidate's chances of winning because it's +3 for Republicans or +4 for Republicans, or if you're a Democrat, it's +4 or 5 or 6 for Democrats. So if you just get your base to turn out, you're going to hold that seat as a Democrat and or a Republican. That's what she's talking about, safe seats. It's awful to do that because then all they have to worry about is a primary, but you still only have one party control and blah, blah, blah. The Democrats are the single biggest defenders of gerrymandering in the history of the United States. The history of the United States. I just shared a tweet the other day from that Senator Schmidt shared, showing the 6 or 7 or 8 worst offenders, all Democrat states, all gerrymandered, all with anywhere from 36% to 48% Republican representation in the state. Zero members of Congress. Zero. They have redrawn the lines and gerrymandered them so that there are no Republicans elected at all in many of these states. That's what they've done. They've done it to grab power. It's raw power. That's all they care about. So now that the Republicans have finally awakened and decided, well, we can do this in Texas. We're going to do this in Texas. It's the worst thing ever now. It wasn't then, but now that was the worst thing ever. So to double down on it, Democrats need to do even more, apparently.
Right. But the answer to what Texas is doing is not for us, you know, who say it's bad for government to bring our hands and go, oh, this is bad for government. It's to like, okay, fine. You want to do it? Let's dance. Let's go. Let's redraw every single state we can as Democrats to create more Democratic seats. That's the only thing we can do right now, because if we don't, this country's representative in Washington will not reflect the country.
How can she even say that? There have been times when the Democrats have had 40 seats in the House, a 40-seat advantage. There have been times when the Republicans have had a 15 or 20-seat advantage. It swings back and forth. The Democrats have gerrymandered to gain as much control as they can over areas they control. But the House changes hands all the time. 5 more districts in Texas, if they added them to what we have now, would give Republicans, what, an 8-seat majority instead of a 3-seat majority? That's not reflective of the country. I mean, it's what, a 52-48 vote for president, maybe a little more than that? That's just close to 50-50. So if you're only talking about a 5-7-seat majority for either party, that's not silencing the other side. That's not reflective of the other side. So Claire McCaskill is as big a hypocrite as anybody because she participated in this for a long time and was totally in support of Illinois and these other left-leaning states gerrymandering Republicans out of office. She did this to us, and now she is angry about it. when it gets done back to them. It's just ridiculous is what it is. Coming up, we'll talk to Shannon Bream, host of Fox News Sunday, see what she's got cooking for this weekend. Stay tuned.
Majority of D.C. residents don't support the guard here. So what's your message to the majority of D.C. residents?
I'm highly skeptical that a majority of D.C. residents don't want their city to be to have better public safety and more reasonable safety standards within Washington, D.C. I don't know what poll you're talking about. Maybe the same polls that said Kamala Harris would win the popular vote by 10 points.
There's only one Shannon.
Shannon Bream, host of Fox News Sunday. Great to have Shannon back with us this morning. How are you, my friend?
Good morning, Mark. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. I was listening to J.D. Vance there. I haven't seen that polling. I know you guys have been reporting on it. I know it's true that Donald Trump lost D.C. by probably, what, 90%?
probably, at least.
I wouldn't think any polling in D.C. would be very favorable to his policies.
You know, all I got to say is that I walked into Union Station, the train station where the vice president and SecDef were yesterday. I was catching a morning train to New York, and I was blown away by how different the place was, because it's become a place now where when we come and go, especially at night from that station, I actually have security meet me from Fox and make sure that I get out of the train station okay. That's just the way it's devolved in the last few years. So to walk in there yesterday and see there weren't a lot of people that were homeless or struggling or laying around on the ground and blocking the stores and the restaurants, there was just none of that. And there weren't people who were coming up to you aggressively asking for money and those kinds of things. That's just kind of what Union Station's turned into the last few years. So it was shockingly different. And I can't imagine that people who use Union Station are upset about that.
No, I can't either. I listened to a CNN anchor yesterday trying to argue with Scott Jennings that, well, you know, I've been yelled at train stations all over the country. Why is D.C. any different? Are they going to send the National Guard to other cities?
Careful what you ask for, because I think that we're getting a bit of a tease from the White House and from various administration figures to say, hey, if this works well in D.C., we might export this to other cities. And there are a lot of blue cities that do not want that and have made clear they don't want the president moving in a way that they feel usurps their authority. That's a, you know, authoritarian kind of move. And to be clear, there are protests in D.C. Against some of these, you know, checkpoints and the crackdown. But there are a lot of other residents that I talked to anecdotally, and myself being one of them, who are relieved to have a little bit of backup there on the streets. And even the police chief has said, if we can have more law enforcement on the streets and helping our officers, that's a good thing.
And if it works and it people feel safer and then it goes away because Congress won't let him keep the troops there, it's going to be an important political lesson for the leaders in these big blue cities, I think.
Yeah.
Well, you hope,
yeah,
anyway.
So we'll see. But, I mean, it's been, it feels like a net positive there on the ground so far.
Let's talk about redistricting. Texas obviously finally got their quorum in the House. They passed that yesterday. Now it's got to go back to the Senate, I understand, I think, down there. And then Gavin Newsom. The Republicans tried to sue him out there in California. The state Supreme Court kind of shut him down, right?
Yeah, and it looks like it may be an issue of sort of a technical, like a standing issue or something like that, that they haven't mapped out the correct grievance or in the right timing. So I do think there'll be more bites at that apple for those lawmakers as this thing progresses. And it may just be that as the measure moves forward, sometimes you have to wait until actual harm hurts, you know, actually occurs before the court will let you get involved. So I'll be interested to see if they refile with kind of a different political theory or a different legal theory behind it.
It's interesting. I listened to Claire McCaskill, our former senator from Missouri, this morning. She was over on Morning Joe. And this is her argument. She said that she's opposed to gerrymandering. But now that the Republicans are trying to basically, she's admitting, match what the Democrats have done in these big states, the Democrats should be all in. Listen. Right.
But that, the answer to what Texas is doing is not for us, you know, who say it's bad for government to bring our hands and go, oh, this is bad for government. It's to, like, okay, fine, you want to do it? Let's dance. Let's go. Let's redraw every single state we can as Democrats to create more Democratic seats. That's the only thing we can do right now, because if we don't, this country's representative in Washington will not reflect the country.
What do you take away from that, Shannon? The Republicans have a 3-seat majority. If they kept those and got 5 more, they'd have 8. There have been times when Democrats have had a 40-seat majority in the House. Is it really not reflective of America?
Well, think about this. I mean, we always know the midterm elections are really tough for the president in power, whomever the party is, R's or D's. I mean, it's always a tough, heavy lift. And Republicans, I think, know they're going to have to do something beyond redistricting. I mean, they're going to have to message well on the Big Beautiful Bill and some other things. It can't just be flipping these seats. There's got to be more to it. But there are states that have representation that are out of whack. Say, you know, if the president lost the state maybe by 10%, and yet their congressional representation is 75% Democrat or versus 25% Republican. I mean, there are places that Republicans argue things are out of whack, and so they're going to do what they can in red states to make sure that they have the best advantage. And it's true that Democrats in some blue states are limited only because they've so gerrymandered the districts already. There's not any more juice for them to squeeze from that lemon. So. It's interesting to me to hear, you know, former Senator McCaskill, because versus that, you've got President Obama and you've got former AG Eric Holder out there fighting against gerrymandering, raising money, saying we've got to stop it. But there are Democrats right now say, well, maybe we'll stop it later. But as long as it's happening, let's get involved in the fight.
That seems to be Claire's take on the whole thing right now. Shannon, thank you. We'll be watching on Sunday.
I'll see you then.
Yep. Thank you very much. Shannon Bream there, host of Fox News Sunday. Of course, we aired at 4 p.m. here on 97.1 FM Talk every Sunday. You can tune in and catch Shannon if you don't get to watch it on TV that morning. All right. Coming up, our friend Griff Jenkins is going to join us. Who knew? I mean, I just don't pay any attention to Venezuela these days, but apparently we're into it with Venezuela again, and tensions are rising. That is something that Griff's actually covering today for Fox News. You might see him on Big Fox later talking about it. We'll find out where in the world he is and what else he's talking about when we come back. All right, before we get to Griff, just a bit of a sad note here. I was just a listener informed me of this just a few minutes ago. James Dobson has died. Dr. Dobson. His family announced it. His institute announced it this morning, about an hour and a half or 2 hours ago. They said he went home to be with the Lord peacefully following a brief illness. His unwavering faith and tireless devotion to the family shaped generations. And boy, that is certainly the truth. He championed life. He championed marriage. He championed God's word. So our thoughts and prayers with the family of Dr. James Dobson this morning. All right, let me play this bite from, a couple weeks ago from President Trump. Listen.
Like, we have Venezuela acting up in a different way. They continue to send people that we rebuff to our border. They continue to send drugs into our country. Venezuela, they've been very nasty.
In Kyiv, Ukraine, Griff Jenkins, Fox News. Along the southern border, Griff Jenkins, Fox News. At the White House, Griff Jenkins, Fox News. In St. Louis, Griff Jenkins, Fox News.
Tell me where in the world is
Griff Jenkins.
Watch your back.
Hey, Griff, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mark. And, you know, listen, let's talk about the news of the day. But that news you just broke there about Dr. Dobson, such a sad development this morning. And sending my thoughts and prayers to the Dobson family and to everybody out at Focus on the Family. You know, I interviewed Dr. Dobson on a number of occasions and traveled once out to Colorado, where Focus on the Family's Christian ministry is headquartered. And
wow.
He really was. It was back, I believe it was back during when George W. Bush was running for president, and we were talking about, you know, the issues that matter most to the Christian conservatives. And you know, when you look back on the span of the last, half century, really, you know, there are few Christian leaders that had a bigger impact on faith, family, culture. That's what Focus on the Family was all about. And his right-hand guy, Gary Bauer, that also sort of ran things out there, worked with him quite a lot. And I think he's really led and influenced political leaders. I mean, he advised, gosh, a handful, a half a dozen or so presidents, and a lot of really where you see the Christian conservative movement now was shaped, I think, undeniably in large part by, you know, his leadership and his influence.
Yeah, it's a good point. He and Billy Graham, for sure, played a big role in that. He was 89, if I'm doing the math right.
Yeah.
So he lived a good long life, for sure.
Indeed, indeed. Yeah. So I
noticed on the rundown, the reason I played that bite from President Trump was the tension between the U.S. and Venezuela. And I saw that Fox has you assigned to cover that today. What's going on down there?
Well, you know, listen, so this story, there's so much in the news today. And yeah. This story is quietly, I would submit to you, Mark, this is quietly a major escalation by the Trump administration taking on not just Maduro in Venezuela's cartels, but also all of the cartels. You know, a major escalation taking the fight to stop the fentanyl and illicit drugs that are coming into the country. You know, little known fact, today is National Fentanyl Awareness Day.
Wow.
And, you know, the DEA sort of has these, you know, annual things, but it couldn't be more significant that I'm covering this story today because you've seen, look, it's not just President Trump. Obama and Biden, we've long since withstood and opposed Nicolas Maduro and considered his government in Venezuela to be an illegitimate government. But this is a major escalation in the sense that now the Trump administration has three destroyers off the coast, international waters off of Venezuela. And you saw that the State Department announced a $50 million reward now for the arrest of Maduro, which is up significantly from, I believe it was 15 before that. And the latest reaction, the reason why it's in the news is Maduro is vowing to defend Venezuela. And there's some 4.5 million militias are organized or mobilized, and he's willing to stand up against it. But at the end of the day, that's his knee-jerk reaction to the fact that the Trump administration has made it a priority that they're going to take on Maduro in Venezuela. And you know, Maduro was indicted for being the leader of this Cartel de los Soles, which is one of the main ones down there. But in addition, of course, we all have talked so much, and I've talked with you endlessly about Tren de Aragua, the violent Venezuelan gang that has literally set up shop under the Biden administration. There wasn't a single arrest of a Tren de Aragua gang member before 2022. Now they're in half of the major states in the country, and wow. And you know, we're arresting them and deporting them, but they've got a foothold here, and so taking them on is really this sort of quiet story that is, I think, fair to say, a major escalation against them. We'll see where it goes.
Good point. It's a good point. All I remember about Venezuela is the stories of them raiding the zoos to get dinner. They were eating zoo animals. Things were so bad there 7 or 8 years ago. So.
You bet.
It hasn't improved, it doesn't sound like. Hey, I was talking to Shannon Bream about this earlier. I'm fortunate enough to have you both on the same morning. And that's the reaction to crime in your loving D.C. neighborhood there. I know you're in Georgetown, but they've really cracked down in D.C. What do you see in there? Like if it's true that carjackings are down 80% and they've arrested all these people and they're actually locked up, doesn't this put a lot of pressure on Mayor Bowser and the others to keep that going after the federal effort potentially goes away in 20 days?
Well, I think, of course, it puts pressure on Mayor Bowser. And look, as you point out, I've been a resident of D.C. I've lived in Georgetown for more than 3 decades.
Yes.
And I've been mugged at gunpoint in the past. My car, you know, 4 months ago was broken into. It's an old beat-up 4Runner. It's 20-something years old, so I don't know why they bother with that. But didn't get anything, you know, just another day in D.C. So, you know, for D.C. residents, crime is nothing new. But I think, to your point, when you look at the fact that the carjackings are down some 83%, D.C. police is claiming that violent crime is down 27% just very recently because of the federal crackdown. And then you put it into context, my colleague Lucas Tomlinson was just reporting on the channel, the murder rate in D.C. was 4 times higher than L.A., 6 times higher than New York. And, you know, that there are very few D.C. residents across all political lines that if these numbers bear out and that continues, that anyone's going to have a disagreement with it. I understand Bowser's got to walk a fine line because maybe some residents feel a little bit intimidated to see National Guard out on the streets. But at the end of the day, if they're safer and it drives these crime numbers down, then when you have people, Democrat pundits going on other cable channels talking yep. about how outrageous this is, they're going to be awfully lonely in that view when you talk to actual D.C. residents. And if you remember last week, I was out. I was like, we're seeing all these people talking on cable and stats and this and that. I said, let me go out for the day. I know some people here in the local news that have been horrific, you know, victims of crime. One woman, her husband was stabbed to death trying to stop a crime. Another son is a paraplegic after being shot 9 times, born and raised. The family lived in D.C. And she said, look, I'm not a Trump guy, but I'll tell you, I'm not against this National Guard coming in because something's got to be done. And it's yet again, in the bigger picture of politics, one more of these issues where Democrats find themselves on the very lonely side of 10% or less of people that want to support having criminals running loose in the city.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, D.C. is unique. And so the federal government can play a role that perhaps would be less possible in places like Chicago or L.A. or New York.
Well,
but I can tell you this, it's most D.C. residents are welcoming anything that gets the crime down.
Well, we're going to do a little bit of planning here, Griff, because I have a good feeling what's about to happen here. When this is successful, and he's only allowed to do it in D.C., it's going to put the pressure and it's going to expose the lies in these other big blue cities about how they've been dealing with crime, including right here in St. Louis. So it'll put the pressure on them to increase the police presence and law enforcement. We're getting more FBI agents. Senator Schmidt announced that yesterday in St. Louis. So when we start to see that impact, you're going to have to talk your Fox News producers into sending you out here to St. Louis, and we'll get you in studio and we'll give you a tour of St. Louis. And see, we can just start planning that now because I know it's going to happen.
I'd love to do it. And I think you are spot on, Mark. And it's not just St. Louis. Look at, you know, Zoran Mamdani, who's likely going to be the next mayor in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
By the time that these numbers go down, he's going to have a tough climb. You look out in Minneapolis, Omar Fattah, the similar socialist cut from the same cloth as Mamdani, he's going to have a problem. All of these Democrats are going to have to find a way to process and really swallow the difficult pill that increased law enforcement to crack down on crime is something that the residents of their cities and states are going to want. And so I'd love to come out in St. Louis and see it.
I love you mentioned that guy in Minnesota. He looks like the pirate from Captain Phillips. I can't see him and not think of that dude. I am the captain now. That's what I think of when I see him.
He does. And what's even more frightening is his rhetoric.
I know.
And again, we all saw what happened to Minneapolis in the wake of George Floyd and the defund the police and the burning down of a police station. Like, this is there are some issues that transcend politics in major ways, and safety and security is among the top of them.
That's a good point. Griff, thanks for your time, my friend. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, guys. Have a great one.
All right. See you later. Griff Jenkins there, live in D.C. All right. Quick break here. We're back in just a minute.
Hey, Pac, I'm coming to tear your kingdom down.
Yeah, remember that. I really, if you're eating breakfast or anything, I do apologize. For Cori Bush. I mean, it's nails on a chalkboard to begin with to hear that voice again. The fact that it was so overmodulated at her concession speech, if you would call it that, where she threatened Jews and she threatened the American-Israeli Political Action Committee because they supported her opponent in the race. Now, that man was a guy named, well, what's his name? Wesley Bell. So Wesley comes home during recess and has a town hall meeting Tuesday night, and I didn't see this till yesterday, but he mentioned the AIPAC thing and listened to the reaction in the room. Like, he was defending, he's like, AIPAC is a thing. Like, they're not, it's not my thing.
Friends, people are doing God's work, and that's their issue. AIPAC's issue is the American-Israeli relationship. That's it. They're an interest group. That's their issue. You ask the question.
Yeah, they started yelling him down. These crazy Cori Bush pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas demonstrators showed up and to by the Post-Dispatch's own description of it, overwhelmed his town hall meeting on Tuesday night. They were chanting. They were complaining about Israel all throughout. It was supposed to be a 90-minute Q&A session talking about reducing crime and other things like that. And he couldn't get around that issue that, AIPAC helped fund his candidacy against Cori Bush, who, by the way, it's important to point out, never accomplished a single thing for the first congressional district in the entire time she was in Washington. She may want to try to take credit for, NGA staying here. So that she didn't have any influence on that either. All she did was sleep on the steps and get headlines with the squad up there. The squad's influence has been crushed in Washington, D.C. Nobody even listens to them anymore. And the last vestiges of that showed up to harass Wesley Bell. I'm no Wesley Bell fan, but anything was an improvement over Cori Bush. There's just no doubt about that. So they had to bring the police in, and some of the protesters were escorted from the building, but there didn't end up being any arrests from what we can tell. All right. A big day tomorrow. We're definitely going to have Catherine Hanway on the show in the 8 o'clock hour, the next attorney general for the state of Missouri. She takes over early next month. So we'll ask her some questions about what she hopes to do, if she's going to be like Andrew Bailey, what her comments were about glyphosate the other day at this news conference where they announced her. A lot of people seem to have some questions about that. So I think we're going to talk to her in the 8 o'clock hour tomorrow. And we're trying to get Senator Eric Schmidt. He has a Fox hit during the 8 o'clock hour, but we're apparently on his schedule. So we're hoping to get them both in the 8 o'clock hour. So a big Friday morning for us here on the Mark Cox Morning Show. Have yourself a great day. Brian Kilmeade coming up here in just a few minutes. He'll have the latest coverage of national issues. And then Annie Fry and Mark Reardon will return at local this afternoon. I'll see you tomorrow morning at 5 a.m.